and that system saying the temperature is 37 degrees too low.
So did Mike get it figured
out?
Yeah,
one of the neighbors went over there and flipped a switch.
We got back to our apartment building last night, and the whole first floor was flooded. So we're in a second floor.
Oh, no.
So it must have busted over the weekend.
Boy.
You just flipped a breaker or something?
Something on the pole.
It just had...
Yeah, Mike, so he knew exactly what it was. He just told the neighbor to go flip it, because the power was...
Is that how your phone is there, too? Like on Green Acres, you got to climb a pole?
We need Quest to get out there, fix some stuff.
For your electricity, you got to...
Okay, I'm ready to go here. Commissioners ready?
Sure. Yes.
Okay. All right. Good morning. My name is Pat Ward. I'm the administrative law judge pursuant to temporary appointment designated by the Office of Administrative Hearings at the request of the Public Service Commission to serve as procedural hearing officer for this hearing. This is a hearing on the settlement agreement of the PSC regarding the complaint against Quest under North Dakota Administrative Code Section 65-09-05-07 for failure to test and correct trouble promptly, and NDCC Section 49-21-10.2 for failure to provide adequate service. This is North Dakota Public Service Commission consolidated case number PU-15-677. Commission served a complaint on Quest, and Quest filed an answer on May 23, 2016. The Commission scheduled a hearing on the matter for December 12, 2016, and issued a notice of hearing on August 17, 2016, identifying the following issues to be considered at the hearing. One, whether Quest is in violation of North Dakota Administrative Code for failing to properly correct trouble in each of the 28 instances described in the complaint. Two, whether the Commission should impose a civil penalty up to $5,000 for each violation. Three, whether the Commission should order Quest to take reasonable and necessary remedial action to provide adequate service, and if so, what action should be required. And four, whether the Commission should impose any other relief that it finds just and proper, and if so, what relief should be imposed. On November 10, 2016, Quest and the advocacy staff filed a settlement agreement. The settlement agreement outlines the additional actions Quest will undertake to improve the quality of its service. The settlement agreement provides that because of the significance and impact of the investments Quest agrees to make, no penalties should be imposed on Quest. Advocacy staff and Quest assert the settlement agreement reasonably resolves all the issues in the complaint. Rather than holding a hearing on the complaint on December 12, 2016, the Commission decided to hold this hearing on the settlement agreement. The Commission also issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, allowing comments and requests for hearing to be filed for a period of time after the December 12, 2016 hearing. The issue to be considered at this hearing is whether the settlement agreement is reasonable and should be adopted by the Commission as a reasonable resolution of the issues in the case. In addition, those interested are invited to comment on the settlement agreement in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceedings and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by December 19, 2016. The record will show that it is a little past 8:30 a.m., December 12, 2016, at the Commission Hearing Room, 12th floor, State Capitol, 600 East Boulevard Avenue, Bismarck, North Dakota, the time, date, and place set by the notice of hearing on approval of the settlement. Mr. Sanderson, please state your appearance for the record.
Thank you, Your Honor. Paul Sanderson, on behalf of respondent CenturyLink QC, doing business as Quest Corporation. At table with me is Kent Blickensdorfer from CenturyLink.
Thank you, Mr. Sanderson. Mr. Armstrong.
Mitch Armstrong, Special Assistant Attorney General on behalf of the Public Service Commission advocacy staff. With me at the table is Stacy Eberl and Patrick Fahn, also part of advocacy staff.
Thank you. Do you have any exhibits you'd like to mark at the beginning?
Yes, Your Honor, if I may. In front of you is a copy of Exhibit A, which is the settlement agreement. The parties have, stipulated to the admissibility of this, and this is the document that was filed as docket number 22 on November 10th, 2016, and at this time we'd offer Exhibit A.
Any objection, Mr. Armstrong?
No objection.
Okay.
Your Honor.
Exhibit A will be received.
Your Honor, excuse me. May I state my appearance?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
Sorry. Alana Jeffcoat-Sacco is commission advisor. And with me is Sarah Cardwell. Thank you.
Any opening remarks from the commissioners before we begin? Commissioner Fedorchak.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thanks for being here. I appreciate all the hard work that's gone into the settlement and to the negotiations so far. I like the direction of it, and I've been frustrated with the length of time it's taken just all throughout this whole process, but I think if we can get to a good resolution that takes care of this area, the customers, not just for the immediate but for the long term, which I'm, if I'm understanding things correctly, there's some pretty strong plans for that area down the road. So I'm pleased about that and look forward to a good discussion today. I do have some questions about the settlement that I'm looking forward to talking to both sides about as it relates to the communications with the customers, some of the long-term investments, and a few other things. So look forward to a good discussion this morning. Thank you.
Commissioner Kalk.
To echo my colleague's comments, the only thing, the witnesses that might end up here, I'm going to ask all of you to define adequate service for me. Because I'm glad we got to a settlement agreement, because that question, I think, to me is still out there. What does adequate service mean? And that's where, when I looked at this case in the beginning, you know, if CenturyLink Quest would have dug their heels in, it would have been very interesting how that would have played out, an adequate service. And that's something the commission has struggled with over the years. But I can tell you that when Commissioner Crisp and I were talking about this in a different subject at one time about, you know, maybe I can't define it, but I can see it. And that's what I think for me is the continued deregulation of telecom has let a lot of customers walk with their feet. So if you don't give them adequate services, they define it, they leave. But in some of the cases where all of CenturyLink Quest operates, those customers don't have those choices. But I think I'm glad that we have this settlement in front of us. But I think the message of the company is, as people get other choices, if you don't give them what they're looking for, they're going to leave. So I think that's what it really comes down to in my mind. But we are still charged with regulating this company, so we're going to do it, and I look forward to a good hearing.
Thank you. Commissioner Chrisman.
Well, that adequate service question is always kind of the big one, and trying to define that without a clear legal definition. But I find this, in reading through it, this seemed like an intriguing settlement. I also have some questions on it as far as the details and the enforcement of it in the long run. This does seem like a difficult challenge, and I too was frustrated by the length of time that it takes to do this, but I get why it's so tough too. CenturyLink Quest Corporation is a large organization in the state, a lot of ground to cover, and I sometimes wonder in my own mind how do they justify the kinds of upgrades that it takes to provide any reasonable level of adequate service in some of these real remote areas? Many of the most remote areas were sold a couple decades ago, but some of them still exist within the company. And, if you parse it down to small enough subunits, I suppose you can always make a case that investing a lot of money for that small handful of customers is just not justifiable. But then if you look at it as a whole state of having hundreds of thousands of customers, then certainly a much larger investment can be justified. That's, I guess, the two extremes, and I don't know where in the middle it lies, but I did think that the settlement agreement, as I read it, seemed to have some reasonableness to it if the answers to the detail questions also seem reasonable. So I'm looking forward to the rest of the information today.
Thank you, commissioners. And I'm looking out over the room, and I'm wondering if there's anyone present other than witnesses for Quest or the commission today. I don't see any. Okay, so I'm going to skip that part of my opening remarks. Any opening statement, Mr. Sanderson?
No, Your Honor, we'd reserve that till the end.
Mr. Armstrong?
Open.
Okay. All right, Mr. Sanderson.
Thank you. The company would call Kent Blickensderfer.
Mr. Blickensderfer, step up. Mr. Blickensterfer, I'm required by law to advise you of the penalty regarding perjury in this state. Perjury is a false statement under oath of a material fact made by a person who knows or does not believe the statement to be true at the time it is made. Perjury is a Class C felony. Class C felony is subject to a maximum penalty of 5 years in prison, a fine of $10,000, or both can be imposed. Having been advised of the penalty for perjury, please raise your right hand so I can administer an oath. Do you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Sanderson.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Blickensterfer, could you please state your full name and business address?
Yes, my name is Kent Paul Blickensterfer. My business address is 220 North 5th Street, Bismarck, North Dakota.
And whom are you employed by?
CenturyLink Corporation, QC.
And what is your position with CenturyLink?
Director of Legislative and Regulatory Affairs for North and South Dakota.
And could you briefly describe your responsibilities in that role?
I'm responsible for all legislative and regulatory between the two states, some federal responsibility, and basically liaison with all government in the states, and then public affairs duties as needed.
And could you briefly describe your educational background and work experience?
Education, I have a BA from in public relations from the University of North Dakota. Work experience for the last almost 19 years, I have been with the same company. However, the names have changed over the time. Originally with US West, then with Quest after the merger there, and now with CenturyLink. Prior to that, I was with state government and workers' compensation for almost 4 years.
And Mr. Blickensterfer, are you familiar with the settlement agreement which has been marked as Exhibit A in this case reached between CenturyLink and advocacy staff?
I am.
Could you briefly summarize for the commission the key points contained in the settlement agreement?
Yes. I'll be as brief as I can, and you can stop me with questions or whatever. Company and the staff have come to an agreement with respect to the things CenturyLink will do to fulfill its portion of the settlement. Key among them are proposals to repair and improve service in the affected areas. Largely, this would be in the Belfield and Fairview exchanges. There were a couple other examples that were listed in the original complaint, and I think those have been handled through the addition of staff throughout the state and fully staffing.
Mr. Blickensterfer, could you just describe for the commission what repairs have been made to date?
Yes. In Belfield, we've identified 8 cable routes that are the leading cause of the trouble reports for that exchange. We will perform and have performed some rehabilitation already, and we'll perform repair replacement work on those routes. We expect that will significantly reduce our trouble reports and customer complaints. The routes are depicted on Exhibit 1, maybe now is a...
The maps.
The maps.
Yeah, on the back of Exhibit A are some color maps that depict... Those are what you're referring to, depicting the routes?
Yes. There are 8 routes depicted in white on that map for the Belfield Exchange, and 2 routes depicted in, I believe, red for the Fairview Exchange. $480,000 total is forecasted to spend in maintenance, rehab work, and cable conditioning. To date, we've spent $192,000 in resolving customer issues. That is contractor and material costs only and doesn't include our labor and overhead. I don't know. Do you want me to go through?
Well, we'll get into that in a second. Could you just briefly talk about the staff issues that have been considered as part of the settlement agreement?
Yes. Prior to the complaint and during the intervening period, we did have some staffing issues in western North Dakota. We are now fully staffed there. In got my numbers here for how many we have in each spot. In Dickinson, we have 3 full-time technicians. In Mandan, we now have 7 full-time technicians. And then in the closest Montana exchange, which would be Sydney Exchange, they're fully staffed at 5 technicians, and those handle our 26 customers that are served out of the Fairview Exchange.
Now, you've mentioned the rehab routes that will take place as part of the settlement agreement. Could you just briefly touch on the company's position as of handling customer complaints as we work through this project?
Yeah. Yes. We I think what you're referring to is in the agreement what the company has agreed to do to specifically with the customers in that area, and that is if we get a complaint from or a call of any type, either to the commission or to us, it will trigger either an email or call to the statewide manager of network operations, who will directly be involved in all those calls, incidences.
As part of the settlement agreement, is the company going to expand with fiber in Western North Dakota?
Yes. As part of the, and again, that's depicted in the Exhibit 1. If you look at Highway 85, north and south of Belfield, CenturyLink has agreed to accelerate its CAF 2 investment, Connect America Fund 2 program, up to 2017. And we will be putting fiber from, I believe it's 8 miles south to 16 miles north of Belfield, and that's depicted in red there. That will allow up to 307 customers throughout that exchange to have the ability to have high-speed internet, in addition to improved voice service, high-speed internet of 10 meg download speeds and 1 meg upload speeds.
And what will be the impact of that on of the fiber on the service quality for the company?
Well, I think it'll greatly improve it. We're also going to put in what my technicians call combo cards into the equipment all along that route. That allows the fiber to be used both for data and for high-quality phone service, voice service.
Can you just briefly explain to the commission the communication that will take place between the company and the staff during the construction projects?
Yes. The company, during that time, will be in contact with the affected customers in the area if there's any work being done that will affect their service. We've also agreed to do monthly reports to the commission, giving them updates on what work is being done and what's being planned. I think that covers it.
And when do you expect this the rehab and repair projects and the fiber projects to be completed?
We're expected to have them complete, subject to obtaining appropriate rights of way, have them complete by the end of 2017.
Mr. Blickensderfer, as a result of this significant investment proposed to improve service to North Dakota customers and in Western North Dakota, did the company and staff agree that no penalty should be imposed?
We did. I believe that the maximum penalty available in this case would have been up to $140,000. Our total expected investment is $2.66 million.
And Mr. Blickensderfer, on behalf of the company, are you requesting that the commission approve the settlement agreement that's been reached with advocacy staff?
Yes, I am.
I have no further questions, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong.
No questions.
Commissioners, Mr. Jeff Gotsako, do you have questions?
Of that $2.66 million that you just mentioned, what are we calling it? The part that's going to be done by the end of 2017, the rehab and the fiber, is that the $2.66 million, or is that part of the $2.66 million?
Is that total? That's both of them, 2.6.
Okay.
1.2 of that will come from a Connect America Fund allocation. That, however, is spread out over 6 years. The rest of it is all company investment.
Is there any additional cost to the company have you identified it specifically for the customer service changes or additions that you're offering?
I have not. We have not specifically identified additional costs there. I assume that if you're talking about internal labor and overhead type thing,
right.
But we've not identified that in this settlement agreement.
Okay. I do have a couple questions here from Sarah. Sarah caught this. I did not. Sorry. The Mandan, you mentioned that there were 7 technicians in Mandan, but the agreement states 8. Is there one that you're looking to hire?
I may have misspoken here. Actually, let me tell you what total technicians I have from my manager of operations. I got this morning from him. There's actually, in Mandan and Bismarck together, there's 10. Now, they may all be housed at the Mandan offices, the Mandan garage, we call it, but there's a total of 10.
And so are all of those 10 available to work in the area, in any area you're serving in North Dakota? Or for the western part of the state, is it only the Mandan-assigned technicians?
They're generally available. The Mandan-Bismarck ones would generally be available from Bismarck West. That's not to say that the company hasn't or won't juggle technicians or bring people in if needed, like we did in the case of this complaint, but where we brought people in from other states to troubleshoot things. But generally speaking, they're available from Bismarck West.
Okay. When did this Connect America Fund begin?
Well, I don't know if I'm the best qualified person to answer federal programs.
Give me an idea.
Connect America Fund Part 1 was a few years ago. Connect America Fund Part 2 was largely done in 2015, 2016.
And have you always been participating or just now?
For the purposes, I think you're asking about North Dakota.
Yes, I am. But I wouldn't mind knowing if you participated elsewhere and not North Dakota.
We did participate elsewhere in CAF Part 1, not in North Dakota. CAF Part 2, we did participate in North and South Dakota. However, there were some states we did not participate in for a variety of reasons, most of them economic. I mean, that's what I can tell you is for the purposes of this settlement agreement, CAF 2 is the only relevant Connect America Fund money.
Okay, but you were participating in CAF 2 in North Dakota before this settlement.
We were participating to the extent we were deciding whether or not we would participate, that we would take the money.
Okay, so you hadn't taken money and used it somewhere else.
Yeah, we have not. This would be the first. That's correct.
Okay, that's all I have. Thanks.
Commissioners, who would like to go first?
Randy, since it's your portfolio, do you want to go first?
Commissioner Christman.
I was writing down some different things when you talked about the $2.66 million. I didn't get what, I don't know what that was about.
Okay.
Earlier, you had said something about $480,000 being expected to be spent on this, and then I missed everything about the $2.66.
the $480,000 that I referenced was in the cable maintenance rehab work.
Okay.
And that is those numbers, I believe, also do not include the internal labor or overhead costs. That's contractor, that's cable, that's drop replacement, that's digging up splices and replacing them, that's pedestal rehabilitation, those types of things. That is not inclusive of the fiber project, though.
Okay, and then when you add in the fiber project, mm-hmm. that's when you get up to the 2.66?
Yes, the fiber project plus plus contractors, plus what I spoke of earlier is the special equipment that we're adding into some of the pedestals to make the fiber work with the copper so that voice and data will work together.
Okay, thanks. So, other than just trying to estimate by what street numbers and such were on these maps and assuming that those were all miles, I was having trouble trying to figure out the perspective on these maps. But if the fiber project is 8 miles south and 16 north of Belfield, then that works out pretty closely using those street numbers. But do you have the mileage of both the fiber project, what would be needing to be plowed in, as well as the other cable maintenance that's on these maps?
Are you asking me for like a total mileage number?
Yes.
I do not have that available. I mean, that's not to say that that couldn't be gotten, but I don't have it available right today.
Okay. The maintenance work, the rehab that's in white on Exhibit 1 and then in red on Exhibit 2, is that all occurring within existing rights-of-way?
Yes. Everything that you see that's not what I've identified as the fiber project on Highway 85 is all within existing right-of-way.
So there's no issues there?
There's no issues there with the cable rehab portion. The only potential issue is with the state DOT on the fiber placement on Highway 85. However, we do have a verbal agreement through the governor's office with the DOT that they will work with us to allow us to provide placement within Highway 85. The right-of-way.
On the fiber.
On the fiber.
What about on the private land? Oh, and you'd run it the whole way in the highway department.
That is our intention. That's our plan. We have facilities within that right-of-way today, so if everything went perfectly, we would place the fiber where our current facilities are.
Okay. So there really shouldn't be much of, as long as the state follows through on that commitment.
That's correct.
We won't have right-of-way issues on either of these.
Right. The only potential right-of-way issue would be if we ran into there was some consideration, some talk about the state potentially doing a major Highway 85 widening project at some point. It's not looking now like the state will have the money to do that. I don't believe there are any federal funds available to do that. There was a potential road job south from Amadon to a few miles south of Belfield that they have on the books, but they don't have anything actually planned or set in place, and they don't have the funding secured for it.
Okay.
Again, I'm not an expert on the DOT's plans, but this is just what I've gotten by discussing it briefly with some of their people and with the governor's office.
Okay, and then that fiber upgrade in the Belfield area, you said a number of customers that would service that I didn't get written down
today. Yes. Well, currently I should note that we have today 174 customers in the Belfield Exchange. This fiber project, when complete, will pass by 307 customers. Now, whether or not they take the service is a different story.
And the 174, in town, do they have is there fiber in Belfield?
Currently?
Yes.
There may be some fiber between Dickinson and Belfield currently, but that is not. We're not using it functioning for...
The city's not... Okay.
Right. I should say, not to my knowledge, there isn't any. I know that there's some fiber out there. I don't know what it's being used for.
Okay. You mentioned monthly reports to the commission. What are those going to include? What information?
Well, they're not specifically defined what the report is going to be in the settlement agreement. However, I would envision that it would be most likely coming from me to the commission staff, giving them an update monthly on, you know, the progress of the work that's been agreed to by the settlement agreement.
Will it include on page 4 of the settlement, the second to the last paragraph mentions an email to the North Dakota Regional Supervisor of Operations when any issues arise affecting these 28 complaint customers that have been identified, would include that information?
It certainly can. You aren't going to find that specific in the settlement agreement, I don't think, but we certainly can stipulate to that.
I think it would be important to keep an eye on that. And now I'm on the last page of the settlement agreement. And I guess we've kind of covered this, but I'd made a note of it when I went through it earlier, that this is contingent on obtaining reasonable and adequate access to appropriate rights of way. And so I'm going to reiterate now that my understanding is right. The upgrades to regular cable, you already have the rights of way. And so really the only thing that is in play here is the state following through on its commitment to allow you to lay that fiber in the state highway right-of-way. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct, Commissioner. The only thing that could potentially be affected in this settlement would be the Connect America Fund fiber project. The cable rehab routes 8 in Belfield, 2 in the Fairview Exchange should not have any right-of-way should not be an issue in any of those.
Okay. No other questions. Thank you.
Mr. Fedorchak.
Good morning, Mr. Blickensderfer. A few additional questions from my perspective. Let's talk first about the customer service. How does what's required in this settlement differ from how the customer service complaints are handled today?
Well, I think that there's a couple of things. Normally, the way it's supposed to work and usually works is a customer calls in with a trouble ticket or an issue. A trouble ticket is ordered then. The customer gets a repair commitment.
And who do they call? Just some general number?
They call, generally an 800 number from the company. And a repair commit date is given, hopefully one that is satisfactory to them based upon workload and conditions. And then they wouldn't hear from us again until the technician would go out and fix whatever problem was out there.
And what happens internally with that complaint then under the normal procedure from the 800 number to?
Then normally the technician would get his workload that day, his or her workload, and they would go out and work it, and then they would close the ticket as soon as it was done, and it would be the customer wouldn't hear from us again.
So at what point currently is this regional operations manager involved, the one that's going to get the direct contact?
He wouldn't be involved unless there would be an issue, a separate issue, an escalation of some sort. Okay. He wouldn't necessarily be involved in every single day-to-day, you know, trouble ticket that comes throughout the state of North Dakota. He will be in
this case. Yes. What I'm trying to do is figure out how what you've established addresses what were the issues before and how does this fix it with these customer complaints not getting to the right person in a timely manner.
Well, I don't know if I necessarily agree that they weren't getting to the right person. I think that we did have some staffing problems out there as far as losing some staff and having a difficulty hiring staff. We also had difficulty getting contract workers for a host of reasons, one of which was the Verizon strike going on. Another was because of competing with the oil business out there. I think that those have been taken care of now, though.
Well, okay, so why should I be comforted by the regional operations manager being involved?
I think it's just another layer of executive oversight to make sure that everything goes smoothly with these customers.
So I'm just like, say somebody has a complaint. These 28 folks get the email of this regional operations manager. Is that how this is going to happen? And they contact that person directly? Do they skip the 800 number?
No. Well, I think that they probably could. I think that the person we're talking about is Terry Van Watermeulen. He's the operations manager for North Dakota. And they would still call in to the number and explain their trouble, but that would trip an email internally to Mr. Van Watermeulen for him to be watching for this.
And how?
Also, if the customer contacted the commission directly, which became very normal.
Standard operating procedure.
In the Bellfield area. Right.
So they either contact us or they contact your 800 number. The 800 number people are going to have something on these customers that flags it and says, now you send this Terry Van Watermeulen an email directly, or how does that not?
I believe that's the case, or his manager out here will see a workload out there and will also send him a notice.
All right. Are all the kinks of this plan worked out yet internally?
It's our hope that we don't, you know, get a bunch of calls, but yes, I think that they are.
Okay.
I mean, I feel like I'm getting a pretty good notice on whenever we have an issue in Western North Dakota.
Okay. Well, if we're going to, I think it's important here. I mean, if this is approved, we're sending a message to the customers that this is going to satisfy their complaints. So if they test it and call Quest, it's important that it works. Otherwise, your credibility is undermined and the credibility of the whole settlement is undermined. So we want to avoid them having to continue calling us and get us out of the middle of it and have it be an effective communication between the company and the customer, and it gets resolved. So this piece, I think, is particularly important. So I hope that all the proper folks involved know what's expected and know what the plan is so that the way the customer complaints are going to be handled and the communication to them in the future is done seamlessly. Okay, so how does the staffing level today compare to what – is it more staff? Have you expanded the staff, or have you just filled all the positions that you always intended to have?
I think that's the latter.
Okay.
We filled vacancies, and for a while we filled them with contract workers.
But you filled them with permanent people now?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Do you expect has the company done anything to keep these folks, to make sure that you don't train them up and they leave, or what's being addressed? You know, what has been done to address that problem?
I'm not specifically familiar with that.
Nothing specific. Okay. And so you've talked a number of times both today and in the past on this issue about the problems with the staffing. So help me understand how much of this issue was staffing and how much of it was just bad infrastructure. And how were those two related?
Well, certainly some of the infrastructure was, you know, is aged out there. I don't know if I can apply a percentage either way. I mean, there was also some you know, weather related, flood related issues that came into play. And anytime you have that, I don't, you know, the best plant in the world will go down under the worst conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know how to apply a number. I think that when you're properly staffed, it's easier to take care of the plant no matter what the age of it.
So if I'm to read this correctly, it was a combination of both staffing and infrastructure, and you're dealing with both by now the staffing is all fulfilled, and you have the staff that you need. They're trained to do the job, and you're replacing the infrastructure. So regardless of whether it was staffing or infrastructure, they're both being taken care of in this.
Yeah, I think that's correct, except for the replacement part. It's you know, repair and replace.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily a wholesale replacement of everything in both exchanges.
Okay. Okay, so were these kinds of improvements envisioned by the company outside of this complaint, or did this complaint really drive these investments?
Well, I think it's fair to say that obviously the acceleration of the CAF 2 portion of it was driven largely by this. Mm-hmm. But cable rehab and maintenance is always part of the company's plan.
So these in under section B, item C, description of rehabilitation and replacement work, is that routine or is that something exceptional for the problems I've identified in this area? It's page 3.
Yep. Are you referring to the grounding, bonding, identified and grounding, pedestal
yep.
condition?
The 1 through 5 there.
Those are all normal things that you would do. Obviously, they become more important when you have increased trouble tickets.
Mm-hmm.
But those are all parts of things that the company does.
So I'm trying to get a sense of how much this complaint drove the company's commitment to this area. Or, you know, and just to get a feel for if there's other things that are going to be popping up elsewhere, if the company is just has the company taken a closer look and made a commitment to North Dakota as a result of this complaint, or is that something that the company has been doing all along? It's just accelerated in some ways.
Well, I think certainly it was accelerated because of this, but you have to look at the number of customers out there. You have to look at the economics mm-hmm. of areas that you serve. Certainly, an exchange with 174 customers is not top on the list for new technology investment because of the ability to get a return, especially in the age of. I mean, you see that we're going to pass 307 customers. We only have 174 of them today.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly a remote area and not one that's you know, the lack of density of customers obviously makes it not as high of an area for investment. If I think that's the question you're asking.
Yeah. Can you just pull up the exhibits? And then just walk me through what we're seeing on them. I've added some information, but number one is Belfield, correct? Exhibit 1?
Yes.
And the white areas are the repair areas?
Yes.
Red is new fiber?
That's correct.
What are the red dots? All those, like, they're numbered?
Yeah. I believe the red dots are sites of where equipment or like a pedestal would go in.
Okay.
All things required to make that fiber work properly.
So the customers that are included in this complaint, are they along the red infrastructure, or are they at the ends of some of this white?
Well, I believe they're both.
So if they're, say you've got a customer at the end of some of these white lines, how is that red going to help them?
Because it's bringing fiber optics out closer to them.
Okay.
Whereas currently they're served pure copper from where you see the word Belfield there out to their location.
So it just gives them a stronger and closer backbone, and so the string out is less.
Yeah, well, and it's also, I mean, not to try to get too far down in the weeds, but it's going to replace some of the antiquated carrier systems that they're currently running on,
mm-hmm.
Which are copper fed and won't work nearly as well as, you know, the new fiber.
And have those systems been part of the problems?
Certainly.
Okay. And then tell me, what is the next page? What's the significance of the next two pages of this exhibit?
I think the next two pages are just the next page is a close-up.
There's nothing new on that or something else I should be looking at there?
No, I don't think so. Well, wait a minute. One of them might be north and one might be south.
Yes, correct.
Is that right? Okay. So the next page then is the north route,
okay.
North of Belfield. The first page you saw was both north and south, and then the page after that, I believe, would be the south route.
And all these addresses, I'm assuming those are the customers that are part of this complaint.
Yeah,
is that right?
I believe that's correct.
So is that what those numbers are?
They may not all be part of the complaint, but they're certainly the customers, yeah. You can see names on there.
Uh-huh. And is that maybe what those numbers are, too, the dots or not? Like the red dots
are? Yeah, they could be. Yeah, I think I may have misspoke earlier when I talked about the dots being equipment. I think that might be actual customers.
Okay. It would be good to know if those are actually, if all 28 of the customers are identified in these maps and location by those dots.
Commissioner, I believe I can answer that question for you. It would not be all 28 of the customers. Not all of the customers are even in this area.
Okay. Fairfield, too.
There's Fairview, and there's some customers spread throughout the state, even in Grafton and Grand Forks area, and those are addressed in other areas. And I think it's more the lawyers who kind of put together the exhibits to this. What Exhibit 1 is, the first page is the overall overview,
mm-hmm.
and realizing that it's, you know, basically a over 20-mile zoom out, we did a zoom in north of Interstate 94, and then which is the second page, and then a zoom out, which is south of Interstate 94. And the addresses and such aren't necessarily, you know, pinpoint accurate or anything like that, but they demonstrate where the customers who we received complaints from are at, not necessarily all the customers who are listed in the complaint, because there were more than that as well, and then just kind of showing their location with respect to where the repairs will be made as
okay.
far as the repair and replace and the fiber optic, if that
all
explains
right.
it.
That's helpful. Thank you, Mitch. Okay, let's see. So I was, maybe I'll leave that up to Mitch, but the other people who aren't listed in these two areas for work, there's not, the settlement is kind of silent on those folks, near as I can tell. Help me understand how their issues are being addressed from the company's perspective.
Yeah, I think those customers were, in our opinion, kind of one-offs and were addressed by the increased staffing. For example, in the Grand Forks Exchange, we'd taken care of the Grafton customer, which he spoke. And then I think there was one in Dickinson. That was a separate issue of requiring a long drop that needed to be laid during the middle of the winter, so it had to go under a parking lot. Also, though, would be helped by the fact that we're fully staffed in Dickinson and Grand Forks now.
All right. Let's see. When do you expect the Connect America component, the red investments, to be completed? Was that 2017 as well, or that's a longer time frame?
No, our intention is to have it done by the end of 2017.
Okay. Great. And then what's the other thing that the settlement, I'll ask the advocacy folks as well, but there isn't any description on what the consequences are in the settlement of a breach. There's reference to, you know, under these conditions, we would determine that to be a breach, but there, near as I can tell on this, there isn't any consequences. What does the company expect to have happen if these timeframes aren't met or if there's problems in implementing this?
You know, I'm not an attorney, so I don't know how to define what happens in North Dakota, under North Dakota law during a breach of settlement. I think that's probably better answered by counsel.
Well, sometimes those terms are included in a settlement. Like, if we don't do this, then this happens. But you guys didn't get into that.
We did not.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That concludes my questions.
Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Kent, for stopping by today. Thank you for your work helping out with the 811. I know we've worked a lot on that over the last few years. I'm going to kind of jump around a little bit. The first is, you said you do a lot of federal work with telecom stuff too, right?
I do some federal work.
Because I'll just get on a little road here for a while. I question our jurisdiction over you guys from the beginning. What do you think that the PSC's real jurisdiction over your company is today?
Well, let me help. Have you help me answer that? With respect to how federal law has jurisdiction, or what do I think your jurisdiction is clearly defined in the statute?
Explain it to me. As technologies have evolved, if I'm trying to explain what the PSC jurisdiction is over CenturyLink to a guy at the Senex station in Botno,
I would take along a copy of 4921.
Do I regulate internet services that you may provide?
I don't believe you do.
Do I regulate the phone hanging on your wall?
Somewhat, yes.
Well, I think
it's an open-ended question. I mean, it's a hard question to answer. I mean, I'll have to clarify several different things. So if you can be more specific, I can try to answer it better.
Well, I'm just trying to – you're agreeing to a settlement agreement, and our advocacy staff has agreed to it, but I'm not sure that we have jurisdiction that we should be signing off on this settlement agreement because it's things that maybe we don't have jurisdiction on.
I think that you have jurisdiction over quality of service, and that's very clear under the law. And so I think you have jurisdiction to sign off on this because it involves specifically customer complaints over quality of service.
But if our complaints are about internet services, I don't think that's something I have jurisdiction on.
I don't think anything in the complaint references internet service.
We get a lot of calls about internet service.
You probably get a lot of calls about wireless service too.
Right. Exactly. No, exactly. All right, but you're okay. I just wanted to get that on the record here just a little bit. What about any of the – do you know of any pending federal cases that would further reduce or eliminate state jurisdiction on your company?
Which state? North Dakota?
No, other states. That there's federal cases out there that if those cases are successful would have implications to the Quest or CenturyLink, Quest CenturyLink in North Dakota. I'm thinking of a couple that I think may have some relevance that would further reduce state jurisdictions.
I can't think of specifically any cases. I guess I remember you and I having some sort of a conversation about this back when the legislature was considering a deregulation bill with respect to internet protocol. Telecom service.
Or any future technologies.
Or any future technologies, yeah.
Which got passed, to my knowledge.
It did, but there were certainly a lot of carve-outs in there that gave you jurisdiction, including that over quality of service.
Okay. But you don't have any specific cases that you're aware of in other states that would further reduce jurisdiction that could apply to North Dakota?
I don't.
Okay.
That's not to say they don't exist. It's,
sure.
I might just be bad at my job.
No, I'm just trying to throw some other stuff here in the record, too. The will there be any money in the Connect America Fund? you're talking about the Connect America Fund to do these things, but to my knowledge, that I don't know that there's going to be money in the Connect America Fund to do anything.
Well, that's the whole reason. I mean, I guess I don't know. Are you talking about federal funding?
Exactly.
I mean, the
some of that I know is a pay-in, but there's a lot of debate about what money is going to be in the Connect America Fund, and will there be anything that you guys actually would receive?
Well, I mean, certainly that's the hope. That's the only reason we participated in it. I mean, the Connect America Fund was designed to push broadband services out to areas where they're not economically feasible today. That's the whole purpose of it. If there's no money in it, then the Connect America Fund doesn't exist. This is something that would be new to me. I mean, we had to agree to participate, and then for that agreement, you know, a certain amount of money was allocated for each state depending on the FCC's models that they did for those areas. And then, you know, there were certain things, there's certain performance standards that we have to meet in order to receive that money.
When do you get indication of what dollars you may or may not be receiving in the future year for the Connect America Fund?
Well, it was all laid out in the acceptance of it. Each state knew what their allocation was going to be from the start. And if you're going to ask me what North Dakota's in, I can get close, but I mean, I can get that for you. I can't remember. North Dakota and South Dakota had two different numbers.
Okay. Okay. No, but you believe there's going to be some money coming, and you folks have factored that into what you hope to do.
We did. We factored it in, and I think I referenced the number for this project. I believe I referenced $1.2 million in funding from the Connect America Fund. And I also noted that is spread out over the next 6 years, and that's also money that will be taxed on. So CenturyLink is covering the rest of that investment to finish that job by the end of 2017.
I guess I just don't know how certain that $1.2 million is going forward.
I'm not certain of it either, but we've signed a settlement agreement with the staff.
Fair enough. What are the number of customers in the whole state? I haven't heard that number yet. Your customers, or maybe I missed it.
I didn't provide it.
Do you, off the top of your head, what's your best guess?
I don't know. I would have to look that up because it's divided up amongst wholesale and retail, and I didn't bring it with me today.
Well, the reason I'm just kind of figure out is, could you maybe just send that along, the number of customers you have in the state with the number of techs that you have in the state?
I can provide the text with you right now. I don't know specifically.
I'm just trying to correlate those numbers and see what the industry, quote-unquote, standard might be to number of customers per number of techs. Because right now I have no reference point if 20 is a lot or if it's so.
Oh, if 20.
I'm just saying you've given us the number. I'd like to know how many customers.
I've given you the Western North Dakota techs. Right, you want the number. Jamestown, there's three. Fargo, there's
how many 24. Customers you have in the state and how many techs you have in the state? So that's just a question. And then I think all of my other questions have been answered. So thank you.
Commissioner, can I get just a clarification for the record on that? Is it part of a late-filed exhibit or just part of an informational?
I think just an informational for me because if I'm asking for the whole state, I don't think that ties to this settlement agreement.
Thank you.
What's the difference? I mean, what's the format of an informational filing?
Well, it'd be considered in the decision, and the reason I ask is because the timing of it would be escalated. I mean, we're trying to hopefully having the order for the work to be completed by the end of 2017. So I think, you know, if it's asked as a late filed exhibit on whether to approve or not approve the settlement, we would want to advocacy mm-hmm. staff would want to set a date on that for the company to get in as soon as possible, versus you know. Having it just kind of floating out there.
Maybe it's something that Kent could, even just if we take a little break, he could probably call and get that from his staff and have it even yet today.
You take a break now.
I have a question about the question. If it's not relevant to the decision here, I don't know if I want to provide it on the record for this since that's proprietary information.
The number of customers is?
Number of customers, certainly.
And if it's helpful, I don't know. From the commission or for advocacy staff's perspective, there was an escalation of complaints that resulted in this in this complaint that we're here for today starting in, you know, end of 2014, beginning of 2015. Realizing the improvements that are going to be made as a result of the settlement, we didn't have a full commitment to carry a certain level of staff into the future, hoping that the infrastructure improvements may not need as many technicians or something in the future, but what we have done is the company has agreed to provide staffing immediately to the levels that they were before this complaint issue arose, and therefore, you know, before the staff was getting as many complaints. So we felt that addressed the issue for purposes of this complaint, just from advocacy staff's perspective. I guess if Mr. Sanderson of the company agrees with that as well, that explanation, but...
Yeah, we agree with that explanation.
So are we doing away with the need for the exhibit then?
Well, I just think you guys just opened up a can of worms here because I'm not even sure. I'd like to question if that's proprietary. I mean, this is a question I'll just ask our attorney, but it seems to me if you're asking for Connect America funds, you got to tell somebody how much money. And if we want to really get serious, do you have enough techs to do the job? To me, if we want to go down that road, I'll reject the settlement agreement and go all the way down that road. But I'm just looking for a simple number. A swag is all I was looking for.
Well, I was talking about the technicians. For the Connect America funds, I think if you read the settlement agreement, the fiber, it's – I don't think you'll find the language in there that says
it's I think for all
on this, receiving $1.2 million in Connect America
I have no
America
major
funds.
Problems with the settlement agreement right now, but we'll just let that question go then.
Okay. Well, there is – you know, comment period open until the 19th, which is another week. Would it be possible that that could be filed as a proprietary, allegedly proprietary document within the week?
Well, just for purposes of my thing, I personally have, staff has no position on whether it's proprietary or not, whether it's
filed
or not,
whatever.
I was just explaining the information for purposes of the settlement agreement. You know, it's a... The nature of the proceeding, there's definitely lawyer involvement heavily in the settlement, and I think Mr. Sanderson and I probably both want to have an opportunity in closing to explain various things. I just want to make sure we know a timeline, because it is important to staff, if the settlement's approved, to make sure and meet the 2017 dates as much as possible.
I'm good without it.
Mr. Fedorchik.
Okay.
Do you have any more questions, Commissioner?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. I think Commissioner Fedorchik is
one. So just to clarify on the Connect America stuff, Commissioner Kalk questioned my understanding, or his questions kind of made me question my understanding of it. But so I'm going to restate what I understand happened, and you can tell me if that's true. You guys applied for a grant, and a grant was approved for you at an X number, and a portion of that grant is being used for this project. Is that how this all came out?
That's pretty close. I don't know that necessarily we applied for a grant. I should also just say, for points of clarification, that I don't know anywhere in the agreement or in our proposal that we made anything contingent upon Connect America funding going through or not. So we signed a settlement agreement with the staff with a commitment to do these projects. Now, it's my understanding that that funding is approved and that we will get it.
You'll be getting it, yeah. Do you know the time frame for the I'm calling it a grant, but just whatever the funding period for that, your Connect America funds, do you know what the time frame was for that?
It's spread out over 6 years.
So it's from like 2016 to whatever?
Yeah.
Okay, and then since that funding is spread over 6 years, but you still plan to complete this by 2017, so the company's going to provide the funding up front and then get reimbursed or whatever is required, but it's not the Connect America funding doesn't drive the timing of this from what you've said.
That's correct.
Okay. Those are my only follow-up questions.
Mr. Christman.
Since there's been so much discussion of Connect America funding and I expect our complainants and others who might be interested in being complainants that will be monitoring this case, would you just lay out some details about the Connect America Fund? I think a lot of people, because of its association with the Universal Service Fund, might be thinking that this is kind of an unlimited fund and you can just get as much of this as you want and upgrade wherever you want. And my understanding is that the availability is not to those kinds of level and that it's pretty a finite amount of money that's available to you and to do these kinds of upgrades. So can you just lay it out a little bit so people understand really the fund we're talking about?
That's certainly true, and you've got a very good idea about how it works. And I'm going to speak to it to my best of my abilities. I'm going to use a couple of numbers here. I don't know if I'm exact on them to the dollar. The Connect America Fund, though, is based upon, and the funding is based upon, a model put forth by the FCC. Maybe. And generally speaking, that model was to serve areas that fall for a cost to serve between $59 to $60 a month up to $200 a month. A lot of this exchange and a lot of rural North Dakota falls way beyond that and would never qualify for Connect America funding. So think of the Connect America Fund as a fund used to provide high-speed internet access to medium-high-cost areas. Much of western North Dakota would fall under high-cost areas. So could we use Connect America funding to serve every exchange that we're in? Absolutely not. And that's why we were able to use it for a portion of the Belfield Exchange, and not the entire exchange.
And so is it fair to say that that's a lot of the reason why, while some of your competitors might, through other funding mechanisms, might be able to bring fiber directly to the premise in very remote and rural areas, you don't have access to that fund, and through the fund that you, the CAF that you do have access to, you would not even be able to use that kind of money to go out to the premise in these very remote areas necessarily.
That's exactly right. I am not an expert and do not understand. I think you're referring to the model used by our cooperative neighbors and the independents. The federal funding that they have access to is entirely different from the Connect America Fund.
No other questions. Thank you.
Any follow-up from the attorneys? Mr.
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Blickensderfer, I want to follow up with a few questions for you. First, with regard to some questions from Commissioner Fedorchek about the maps and customers. Just so we're clear, the addresses on there that we see, and some actually have customer names, those are the complaining customers in this complaint in this case, correct?
I believe that's correct. I think I misspoke earlier when I identified those dots as equipment.
Fair enough. I just want to make this perfectly clear, Mr. Blickensderfer. Am I correct in understanding that every complaining customer in the Belfield area is on one of the routes or fiber and will either have rehab or new service to their premises, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. Mr. Blickensderfer, you were also questioned a little bit about the 2.66, and I'll try to see if we can clarify this. Of that 2.66, that involves everything, the work that's been done, the 10 rehab routes in Belfield and Fairview, and the fiber project, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And just so we're perfectly clear, Mr. Blickensderfer, the company, as of the time of the settlement, had expended approximately $125,000 already in work to help improve service to these areas, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, you talked about the $480,000 number, and that's just for the rehab of the 8 routes in Belfield, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then the rehab of the 2 cable routes in Fairview, that number is $55,000, correct?
Yes, and I don't know if I mentioned that, but that's right. That's $55,000 for the Fairview Exchange.
Okay. So the $125,000 expended plus the $480,000 for the rehab in Belfield plus the $55,000 in Fairview equals $660,000, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And then an additional $2 million in the Connect America Fiber Project brings us to 2.66.
I think that's right, 1.2 in CAF plus 800,000 of our own.
Okay. And finally, Mr. Blickensderfer, Commissioner Chrisman asked you a couple questions about the notification. And as part of the settlement agreement, the company has agreed to notify customers located in the Belfield and Fairview exchanges of the rehabilitation projects as they're ongoing, correct?
Yes, that's correct. I think that is somewhat related to if the projects will be service affecting. But yes.
Okay.
With that, I have no further questions. Thank you.
Mr. Armstrong.
Nothing, thank you.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle.
I have a couple. Kent, I just want you to think about the statutes, since you carry that law book around when you buy gas. The statute defines telecommunications service, does it not?
It does. I think it also defines what it is not, but yes.
Yes, and it lists some things it is not. Okay, and there are two categories of telecommunications service, I believe. Mm-hmm. Is that correct from your recollection?
From my recollection, it is. I believe. Are you referring to essential and non-essential?
Yes, I am. Okay, so my third question is, did any of the complaints, the customer complaints, in the complaint, were any of them about essential service that those customers were receiving?
I believe that almost all of them were. I can think of for sure one example that was for non-essential because it was a business that would be classified under non-essential. But I believe almost all of them were.
And was that businesses, we won't have to get into the weeds. That's all I needed to know. Thanks.
Okay, anything else from the commissioners? Looks like you could
just one thing I want to clarify. And so, Kent, you had said that I've gone through the list of complaints now more closely, and near as I can tell, there's about 12 that are not in this area, the Fairfield and Fairview and Belfield area. I'm not sure where Cummings and Cartwright are.
They would be under
Cartwright
the Fairview.
Is, okay. So, and you testified that all the other complaints included in this, you believe, are being addressed by the staffing, improved staffing. That's the company's position?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Anything else from Mr. Blickensderfer?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong?
No.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
No, thank you.
Kent, you can step down.
Thank you.
Mr. Sanderson.
We have no further witnesses. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong, do you plan to call a witness?
Yes, call Stacy Ebro.
Okay, let's take a little break. Looks like it's about 9:45 on there. Come back about 9:55.
I'm definitely watching that one here as soon as I can be home long enough.
Okay, back on the record here, it's
9:55. A long weekend. Mike did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I saw your garage when it was clean.
No, you didn't. It was not clean.
Miss Ebro, will you spell your first and last name for me?
Yes, it's Stacy, S-T-A-C-Y, Ebro, E-B-E-R-L.
You were here when I gave the perjury admonition to Mr. Blickensderfer, so I'll just ask you to raise your right hand. You promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Armstrong.
Thank you. You've already said your name for the record. Where do you work?
North Dakota Public Service Commission.
In what position?
I am the Consumer Affairs and Public Outreach Specialist.
How long have you been in that position?
Almost 3 years.
What do you do in that position?
I do lots of stuff. In relation to this case, I take all of the consumer complaints that come into the commission for anything that we regulate and lots of things that we don't regulate, and assist people with getting them directed to the right person or actually filing the complaint. I also, as another part of my job, do public relations, media relations type functions.
We're here today on a complaint brought by advocacy staff, and you've been appointed as part of advocacy staff, correct?
Yes.
And we have numerous complaints alleged in the complaint, and are those the type of calls that you take in your position?
Yes.
And when you take those calls, do you work with the company Quest or CenturyLink to get those issues addressed?
Yes.
Can you just tell us how that process works in your office?
We have a complaint system database for each of the companies where they have designated a point of contact for complaints. And so when I get the complaint, I file it in that system, and then the complaint gets sent to that company person. The company then responds however they need to respond, whether it's fixing something or fixing a billing issue or whatever the complaint was. And then they have to file a response back with me. And then I look at the response and determine whether it's adequate and close the case, or if there's further follow-up needed, then I follow up further until the issue is resolved with the customer.
So in advocacy staff's complaint, we've alleged 28 specific violations. And as I understand it, you were involved in a process with each of those complainants. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you're familiar with Exhibit A, the settlement agreement in this case. Is that correct?
Yes.
And is it advocacy staff's position that the settlement agreement should be approved?
Yes.
And in your position, in evaluating those complaints, do you think it reasonably addresses the concerns associated with the complaints that you've taken in your position?
Yes.
That's all the questions I have. Thank you.
Mr. Sanderson.
No questions, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
No questions.
Commissioners, Commissioner Christman.
That went faster than I was expecting.
When you're first, you gotta be ready.
So, you described to me how this resolves the complaints from outside of the Belfield and Fairview exchanges from places like Arvilla and Cummings and Center.
Sure, and those were probably the most difficult to fit into the overall realm. But for the most part, the complaints are based upon a delayed reaction when the complaints are filed. So somebody files the complaint and it may take a technician 2 weeks to get out there and fix it. That's where the staffing issue comes in. So hopefully with the staffing levels increased and all the positions filled, they'll have adequate technicians to get to the customers when they have problems that need to be fixed. Also with the increased communication, hopefully that solve some of the communication issues that we see. Sometimes customers just need more information, and if they're informed about what's going on, then hopefully that won't result in a complaint to us.
Over the course of your almost 3 years, a lot of these complaints have been in kind of small bits of time revolving around weather conditions. Is that correct?
Yes, I would say that's correct, yeah.
And so I don't think we ever clarified with Mr. Blickensdorfer about the timing of when they at least were close to being fully staffed. Do you feel that that there's been enough time gone by now since they have been working on their staffing issues as hard as they have been, that you're seeing those improvements and that there's evidence already that the better staffing levels will solve these other problems, or is that still just an assumption or a hope?
Yeah, and I was actually thinking about that last week as we were preparing for this, so I pulled the overall complaint numbers from year to year, and I can provide those numbers if you're interested here, but the complaints for this year, 2016, have significantly dropped compared to 2015. And I do believe that they are being more responsive to those complaints. We still have some areas that I have customers that I hear from all the time. And those are more based upon the fact that their lines just need work. So CenturyLink may get out there promptly and fix the line, but then 2 weeks later it's down again. Those types of issues where it just the lines just need work. So hopefully the line rehab issues will solve that. But in our complaint system in 2015, we had 89 complaints, and this year to date, we have 56. So they have dropped.
And you think those are a lot of the ones that were coming in that the better staffing levels have probably solved or made a difference?
I think it's helped. Like I said, the problem hasn't completely gone away, but once again, it's because the lines are still going down. So hopefully if the lines are rehabbed and replaced or whatever needs to happen, if the lines don't go down, then we won't have the response issues. So it kind of all goes hand in hand.
Okay. And then the settlement agreement does not establish any principle or precedent for this or any future proceeding. So what is your reaction when complaints occur, if they do, in the future from somewhere else where it is a problem with equipment or cable? We can say that it doesn't hold a precedent, but does this cause advocacy staff to potentially bring another complaint then in those cases? Because if this turns out to be successful, or how do you imagine things going forward?
Yeah, and Mitch can maybe expand on that a little bit, but I think we have the ability to bring a complaint at any time if we see another area with the similar issues that we have been seeing in these areas.
So that could occur even had this settlement not occurred, so it's not necessarily a result of this settlement.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, no other questions. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you, Stacy. Back to your discussion about the complaints from 2015 to 2016. So how does that, those number of complaints compare to other utilities that we regulate from customers? Is that, are they on par with 56 to what, say, NSP, Otter Tail? I mean, I know it's not directly related, but it's right. A comparison that I'm...
Right. As you're aware, I do a report for at the end of the year, and it's always slightly higher. Now, once again, I don't know if you can compare them because it's different issues and different possibly customer numbers, but they do usually have a higher number than the electric companies. But once again, it's not really a same comparison. We don't regulate any other telecoms like we do CenturyLink, mm-hmm. so I can't compare them to any other telecoms.
Right. The complaints that you're still getting, you said those are related to line issues. Are those related to line issues in the same area that are being addressed, or are they different line issues elsewhere?
It's the same areas.
Okay. So you're pretty comfortable that this settlement addresses the biggest infrastructure issues that we're getting complaints on?
Yes, those were the areas that we focused on, the Bellfield and Fairview areas and Cartwright areas where we have the recurring problems over and over.
And are the 56 complaints from this year still coming from that area?
Some of them, yes.
Okay.
Some of those customers are no longer customers, so I don't hear from them anymore. They've told me that they've dropped service. Mm-hmm. But some of them are the same customers that I hear from.
Almost. Any idea what percentage of the 56 are coming from this area?
Of the 56, what number is that? What are you referring
56
to?
56 is the number of complaints in 2016.
Oh.
That we've received.
I don't have it broken out by the actual cities, so I couldn't tell you. And then also, I'd have to break out which ones are due to phone outages and which ones are, like, billing. So that's an overall number.
Okay.
So I didn't break it out that billing. Far. Yeah.
Do you have a sense of the 56, how many are billing related? A third?
Ballpark? Actually, I should be able to look at that. So of the 56, 27 are due to actual outages.
Okay.
The rest are
billing.
Billing or customer service or those types of calls, yeah.
All right. In terms of the communication with the 28 customers in this complaint, have you had any communication with them since the complaint was filed? Do they know about this?
Yes. Like I said, some of them are still having issues, and I hear from them regularly. And so they've been asking. One of them actually called me on Friday to ask about the hearing and if they could listen and all that. So some of them are keeping up to date on what we're doing.
All right. Do you feel that the plans in this settlement for communications with the customers are going to do anything to change? I wasn't super comforted from the discussion with Mr. Blickensdorfer that there's a significant change in how the company is going to be communicating with the customers when they call in. Mm-hmm. I still feel like they might get a bad experience from that very first person
and then it's nothing has changed. So what made you think that this, in going along with the settlement, this addresses that issue?
Yeah, and we talked about that a lot through our different versions of this, and it is a really hard issue to pinpoint in paper. It does help when we have the folks on the ground here in North Dakota involved in the complaints. So when Terry Van Watermeulen knows what's going on and when Kent knows what's going on, I have noticed that it helps. So that notification to the people here in North Dakota, I'm hoping will help. There's also a section in here that talks about the notification on page 4 under number 2. It talks about, this was another thing that we talked about a lot, was people would receive repair dates. So when they would call in, they would be given a date when a tech would be coming out. And then those dates were constantly being broken. The customers would tell me they were going to be here, they didn't show up, they were going to be here, they didn't show up. So there is some language where they've committed to meeting those repair dates.
Okay.
So we have something in there at least that we can hopefully hold them to. Now, once again, I'm hoping that when we solve some of these line issues, we won't have as many complaints coming in. So it does go a lot back to keeping the phones working. If we can keep the phones working, then we eliminate a lot of the problems. But but you're right, the communication issues are a hard thing to put in paper to.
And did you ever get an understanding from the company as to what caused those dates to be missed? Was it lack of staff, or was there some where one person was committed to this date and then the staff person on the ground never knew about it?
I think a lot of it goes back to the staffing issues that they were having at the time.
Okay.
And especially in these rural areas where you have distances, so they might, you know, assign a tech to get to all these places in one day, and then it just wasn't possible. And once again, it was just the lack of communication back to that customer about what was happening, which was really frustrating the customers, though. You know.
And how does that change in the settlement, the communication back to the customer?
Well, for our priority customers here, they're going to have, once again, direct contact with the people here in North Dakota.
I don't read it that way. I read that they will call the main number, and then right. Terry Van Watermeulen will get an email. But I don't see anything that calls for direct contact. Maybe I'm missing that. So,
well, in the past, my experience has been when they're notified here, then they're kind of looped in on the case so that the customer has somebody here to contact. I don't know exactly how that happens, but okay. I have seen it. Whereas when they get looped in, then the customer somehow has a North Dakota contact rather than Denver.
And it doesn't keep, they don't have to get referred back to the Denver office.
I'm hoping so.
Okay. Okay. Are there any other, let's see, of the areas outside of the Bellfield Fairview, your confidence that those are going to be addressed is because those were largely staffing, not infrastructure issues that were?
That's my understanding. The other ones were just random here and there. And not the result of complete systems in an area needing work.
Okay.
It was more of issue of one person having a specific problem, and because of the staffing, they didn't get timely response to fix the problem.
Okay.
But we don't have whole other areas like Bellfield and Fairview where the whole area is experiencing problems because of infrastructure.
So we don't have a record of a series of complaints in one area. Outside of this?
Outside of those areas in western North Dakota, no.
Okay.
I don't see those areas in any other parts of the state like that.
And then what did you, do you have any comments to make about if the company doesn't live up to these obligations, what are the teeth for us in terms of a breach?
My understanding is that we can come forward with another complaint. I don't know, Mitch could talk a little bit about if there's an exact breach of this settlement agreement, what happens.
Okay, maybe he'll address that in his closing comments. Okay, all right. I think that concludes my questions. Thanks, Stacy.
Mr. Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Stacy, for your questions, answers, and all your work on this. I know you spent a lot of time. The prior to the Dakota Access complaints that you started receiving, if you had 100 phone calls, how many would be Quest, based on the best guess, concerns about Quest?
Half of them.
But it was a large number of your day up until that point. And so now you said it's dwindled down, if you will.
It has.
So, and you're not on trial here, so don't take this question the wrong way, but because I struggle with when someone calls me and has a complaint about something that's not our jurisdiction, I don't just hang up the phone and say it's not my jurisdiction. I try to help them. So, and I know you do the same. So when you get these phone calls about concerns about Quest, what kind of filter do you put on it, that whether it's really a jurisdictional question or not? I mean, if someone calls complaining about their internet service, do you log that a complaint or do you just try to walk them through it? How do you apply a filter, if you will, to something that we really don't have jurisdiction on?
Right. If it's like internet related, I don't file it as a complaint because we have no jurisdiction. But I usually send a message off to Mary Brewer, is my contact in Denver that I work with. I'll usually still send her a note and say, hey, this customer is having problems. Can you help them out? And then she'll do. But I don't file it as an official complaint. But if it's anything phone related, I file it.
Okay, fair enough. And then how would you define adequate service?
That is a tough one. I can say that I know that there's provisions that say they should be responding to outages. I don't remember what the exact wording is, in a timely fashion or something like that. If you look through the complaints, you'll notice lots of cases where customers were out for weeks, sometimes even months. I don't know how you would define that as adequate in any definition.
Got it. And then good answer. If you could have got one more thing in the settlement agreement, what would you have asked for?
Wow, you have hard ones.
And if nothing comes to mind, that's
yeah. I was going to say, you know, the biggest thing was the improvements to the lines, because, like I said, there's these areas where I'm having repeat customers out, and the lines just need work. And so the fact that they were willing to agree to some investments in these areas was the biggest thing that we were looking for. Because if you improve the lines, hopefully we stop seeing these complaints. The other thing that I don't think I pointed out anywhere is this area also has very poor cell service. So these customers don't always have a choice to drop service and go to cell. That's one thing that I hear over and over from them.
So someone in the Grand Forks, Grafton area could have walked somewhere else.
Right, right. If they have bad service, drop it, use your cell. These areas have very poor cell service. And so it's very important that we have working lines for them, because it really is their only line. And so that's, I would say, the most important thing that I was looking for at this point, was for them to agree to those investments and those lines so we can keep those lines up and going for the people that need them out there.
Okay, and then the last question, I think. So if there's some thoughts that they've clearly not provided adequate service, why don't we just reject the settlement agreement and fine them $140,000?
Once again, I don't think that that would directly improve the service for the customers. They pay a fine and it goes to the general fund, and the lines still sit as they are. So I would much rather they take the money and invest it in the infrastructure out there to help the customers.
What about fining them $140,000 and suspend it, as long as the service is good and you don't get a bunch of phone calls?
That would have been an option. Okay. If we continue to have problems, things that we can look at. But once again, in my opinion, and as we agreed, it's much better for them to invest the infrastructure at this point in the infrastructure.
All right. Thank you, Stacey.
You're welcome.
Mr. Armstrong, any follow-up?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Sanderson?
No.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
No, thank you.
Commissioners?
I do.
Mr. Chrisman?
So the settlement agreement that you signed, you dated the 10th of November, and the Quest Corporation Vice President of Operations didn't date theirs.
Okay.
But I assume it's sort of the same time frame, and the about just over a month delay from then till now is because we need the public notice time and all that. Is that correct?
Yes, and actually the notice time still needed. That's why there's still a public comment period, because it didn't quite match up. But, yeah, because we were using the same hearing date as we had set before.
And that goes to my next question. There's still another week or roughly a week of time for public comment.
Yes.
Requests for a further hearing.
Yes.
And if this has changed significantly, well, I think if it's changed at all, either party can back out of the settle agreement and start the whole thing over again. Is that correct?
I'm going to look to Mitch, but I'm assuming so. But
basically what the settlement agreement says is that if the commission changes it, either party has 3 days to file basically a withdrawal from it and can do that.
Okay. So then beyond that, and here's the point that I'm really getting to. What kind of a time frame is there on this, do you feel? If the commission just waits, I presume that the company, in order to serve their customers well, probably starts down this road anyway. And we're this far. If we didn't take action on it, what would be the result of that? Was there ever a discussed... kind of a limitation on how much time before there's a commission response needed?
I don't think so. As you notice in the settlement agreement, they have agreed to completing the work by the end of 2017. So I would think it would be important to have everything in place so that they can start the work as soon as possible. I know weather, obviously they can't start everything right in the middle of winter, but they would want to be ready to go as soon as the weather permits. And I think holding them to that timeline is important so that it doesn't get drug out longer than it needs to. Part of the settlement bumps up the Connect America Fund grant sooner than they were originally going to implement it. So holding them to that in 2017, I think, is also a good thing for the customers in that area.
So that's probably a key element in why we should get this, from your perspective, get this in place rather than just assuming that now they're going to follow through with these upgrades.
Yes, I think it holds them to a strict timeline of completing in 2017, whereas without that, they wouldn't be held to that timeline and could potentially push it out further if they wanted to. Okay.
Thank you.
Chairman Fedorchak.
I have to remember what it was. Darn it. Lost it, and I didn't write it down. Sorry. Guess I'll.
Commissioner Kalk, anything else?
Sure.
Counsel?
No. No, Your Honor.
Jeff Gotsacco?
No, thank you.
Okay. You can step down. Mr. Armstrong?
No further witnesses.
Ms. Jeff Gotsacco, do you have any witnesses to call?
No, we don't, thank you.
Okay.
No rebuttal, Your Honor.
All right. Going to get a little closing statement from the attorneys?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, Mr. Sanderson.
Thank you. Commissioners, on behalf of the Quest Corporation doing business as CenturyLink, we thank you for your time here. It's the company's position that the settlement agreement presented to you and filed between the company and staff reasonably addresses the concerns identified by the staff in the complaint. Most importantly, as both the witness and the complaint indicates, the majority of complaints and problems in this case, not all, but the vast majority of significant problems in this case arose in two distinct areas, the Belfield Exchange and the Fairview Exchange. And I think the company's response in this is to address those concerns. Now, not all, but One of the things you heard today was during the time this occurred, the company did have staff issues. It was competing with the oil field, and there was other issues. It lost some people and was having problems. As part of this settlement agreement, even before, the company has addressed those staffing and concerns and gotten the staff levels to a level that was pre time of the significant complaints. But I want to address one thing in the
in the settlement agreement that I don't think was brought up, but specifically addresses Commissioner Fedorchuk. You had asked, one of the concerns with the complaints we were having is that, and the staff witness indicated that sometimes customers were notified of a repair date and it wasn't met. And you'll find in on page 4, section 2, handling of customer complaint tickets, that one of the things the company is agreeing to in this settlement agreement, and it's the second half of that first sentence, the company is providing advance notification to customers when repair commitment dates cannot be fulfilled, with the goal of decreasing service intervals. That wasn't something that was being done before. It probably should have been, but we think that communication issue, if we are not going to meet a repair deadline that was committed to by the company, we will call in advance and notify them that we won't be there. And we think that is one area in the settlement agreement that will address some of those complaints of people that, you know, we were originally giving them a date. We weren't meeting those dates, and sometimes there was a breakdown in communication, so to speak. And this settlement agreement attempts to address that by specifically indicating we'll do that, along with some other reporting requirements. And we do think for those chronic customers who have had problems in the past, until these repairs are completed, if they make a call, the director of operations in North Dakota will receive notification. We've been on that. Now, this isn't something, you know, I think there were some questions to the company's response. And to this point, before the settlement agreement, the company's already expended over roughly $125,000 in improving its facilities and improving the staffing. And the response to this, and the email notification that we talk about in here has already been put in place with respect to those customers. And I think that helps reflect why the complaints have significantly dropped in the year of 2016 compared to before. So the company has taken this very seriously and already included that investment. But in addition to that, this settlement agreement, as you heard, we propose to rehab 10 routes that have caused or were the most problematic for the customers in these areas. But most importantly, the rehab projects that we will do will address every single customer that's part of the complaint. Their facilities will be rehabbed or repaired and replaced as part of that project. So that should significantly address those issues. The second component of that, as you've heard, is the fiber project. And that's the component that the company believes will greatly reduce any future problems here and greatly improve service not only to the current customers but other potential customers. As Mr. Blickensdorfer explained, 307 potential customers in this area that will have broadband internet access as a result of this project. But what that does, the fiber project not only brings that, but it also will improve the service on the existing copper by improving those facilities on those routes north and south of Bellefield. So it's a very significant investment, as Mr. Blickensdorfer explained. So we think with the proposed investment in infrastructure along with the staffing, with the company, and I think the staff agrees that this should take care of the complaints that we've had in this area. Now, one of the key components as well is due to the significant investment, and I think you heard the testimony, the dollars expended versus the number of customers shows it's a very significant investment into Western North Dakota. And due to that, the company and staff has agreed that no penalty should be imposed on the company. This commission, pursuant to North Dakota Century Code 490701.1, the legislature granted you the power to compromise any civil penalties, and we would ask that you do that. As Mrs. Eberl testified, both the company and staff believe that putting this money into further investment to improve customer services is a better use than sending it to the general fund or paying a penalty in this area. Finally, it is important to the company in this, as we've said, we've already taken major steps to improve service, but getting this project in place and completed in 2017 is a significant goal for the company. The sooner we can get the settlement agreement in place, the sooner we can get the Connect America funds going and get this project completed, and the sooner it will reduce customer complaints, we believe. And as part of that, you know, as part of this settlement agreement, the company has agreed to provide monthly updates to the commission as to the status of the projects, and equally as important, provide notification to those customers if their services are going to be impacted during the construction portion of these projects. But the goal is to have this done prior to the end of next year. It will be completed in the next 12 months, assuming everything works out, and we believe, and the company believes that they will, and this project is ready to move forward. So with that, the company would urge, respectfully request and urge the commission to approve the settlement agreement as written between the staff and the company. And with that, we thank you for your time.
Mr. Armstrong.
Thank you, Your Honor. Starting off, advocacy staff would urge the commission to approve this settlement as is. We do believe it reasonably resolves the complaint issues that you have before you. Saying that, the settlement agreement does arise from disputed issues between advocacy staff and the company. Being it's a settlement agreement, we're not here today to decide who was right on that or who was not, but both sides, for their own particular reasons, agree that it reasonably resolves those issues. And we've taken kind of a broad approach in resolving those, one with improving communication, and two with improving infrastructure. So we've got two what we call kind of focused areas, and I call it Cartwright or Fairview, and then the Bellfield area, which definitely needed additional infrastructure. And you heard Mr. Blickensderfer's testimony that, yeah, the company reviews those things and replaces and repairs lines. But from advocacy staff's perspective, it wasn't so much that they would do it sometime in the future. It's that when is it going to get done? So we've agreed with the company that this stuff would get done in the year 2017. And I'm not talking about fiber right now. I'm talking about the repair of the copper lines for those customers who are having infrastructure issues. We believe, through our investigation and from our discussions and from our negotiations, that these improvements will improve the quality of service in that area. Now, being that that's something that will happen in the future, while some of it has already happened, we have seen improvements in the number of complaints. So we've seen some evidence that it will improve. Then you take and add and accelerate the fiber onto it. What we felt was important about this is, one, the customers are getting an even additional benefit of service. We're moving it up another year in the time frame so that the customers, to the extent there's impacts during construction, are affected, you know, relatively at the same time. Now, there was some discussion at the beginning of this case of how long it's taken to resolve. I would note that our complainants were all complainants dealing with the very latter part of 2014 and into 2015. We sit here today in December of 2016 with a settlement agreement that staff and the company believes will dramatically improve the quality of service in that area by the end of 2017, and which has already had an impact on improving the service by the decrease of the customer complaints. We think the time period has been what was necessary to fully investigate it, to fully work out a resolution, and to fully improve the service in those two areas going in the future. The second area of the settlement is the communication issue. Now, this basically affects all of the complainants, Grand Forks, Grafton, Dickinson, Bellfield, Cartwright, all of those areas. And, you know, this is one of the areas that it's difficult to say, hey, you did this, and they say, no, we didn't. So let's work something out. What have been the problems? We felt that people were calling the commission when there were maybe some communication breakdowns one way or the other, that may or may not be able to be explained without bringing all the customers here to talk about them. So we kind of narrowed that down to, you know, it kind of being, hey, they tell me they're going to show up and then they don't show up that date. So I think the part of the agreement that Mr. Sanderson mentioned about providing that advance notification when you're not going to meet those staffing dates was very important. So we felt that was important. And we also felt it was important to get the technician level up to where it was before we started receiving this variety of complaints. That way, hopefully, you would meet the dates, but if you don't, at least you're letting the customer know so they know that they don't need to call Stacy and report a problem. They're at least in constant communication. So we felt that addressed all of the complaints. And you'll also, you heard Ms. Ebro testify that there were 89 complaints. You'll see You know, our complaint alleges 28 violations. Plain and simply, you know, not every one of those 89 complaints rises to the level of something we can bring a complaint on under the law. So there's a whole variety of complaints of whether, you know, the real issue comes in, are they repairing trouble with their infrastructure promptly? And I think that, played with the language of adequate service in the statute, really provides you kind of the guidance of what providing adequate service is. Hey, my telephone works. If it doesn't and it's the company's infrastructure, they're out there as soon as they can to fix it. That's, I guess, how I would explain in layman's terms what I think adequate service is. Overall, we believe this settlement addresses all those issues and will have improvement in the future. But if it doesn't, and there's been questions from the commission of what happens if the company doesn't live up to this settlement. And I acknowledge that in some settlement agreements, there are specific terms for a breach. And frankly, in this one, there intentionally are not specific terms for a breach. And there's reasons for that. There could be various levels of severity of a breach here. For instance, if we had a term in there that said any breach of this settlement agreement will result in a $5,000 fine to the company. Well, we don't want, and not saying they would, but we don't even want it to be an option that the company says, well, we don't want to repair that line. It's going to cost us $100,000. We'll just take the fine of $5,000. So we want to be able to have the ability to enforce this settlement agreement depending on the level and the nature of any breach that might occur, and to work with the company to make sure it complies with the settlement agreement. That's why we have the monthly reporting. And for the terms of what the monthly reporting is, it's basically monthly reporting that shows us that they're meeting their obligations under the settlement agreement. We've had good communication with the company in this process, and we expect that to continue. And we do believe that this settlement agreement is a reasonable resolution to the complaint that's before you. Thank you.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, closing remarks?
I have nothing. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioners, closing comments. Mr. Christman.
I do not, except for I will appreciate everyone's information and all the work that went into the settlement process, and I expect that it shouldn't take a lot of time after the comment period closes, in my mind, to reach a decision on this.
Chairman Fedorchak.
Thank you. Well, thanks to both the parties for dealing with this in such a methodical way. I like the direction of the settlement a lot. I think there's some really important commitments made here by the company to improve the service in that area. And I've never questioned the commission's jurisdiction in this area. Just because the quality of service term isn't defined doesn't eliminate our responsibility to make sure that Quest is providing quality service to the customers. And I think that there's been some urgency in this area because of the lack of other options these customers have. And so in terms of emergencies and being able to get a hold of 911 in an emergency, this is vital for those folks. And that's why it exists. That's why you have those responsibilities and why we have the responsibility to ensure that that you're providing adequate service. So I look forward to working through this. All my questions were addressed. I really see three key pieces: improving the staff level and improving the staffing, improving the communications, and then significant new investments. So I think that there's a lot of good stuff in this settlement, and look forward to resolving it before the end of the year.
Commissioner Koch.
Thank you, everyone, for your testimony and the putting things together. Mitch and Paul, good wrap-up for you guys. I just thought to Randy, who's got the portfolio. I'm free December 20th, so the close is the 19th, but I agree that we could close this up this year. The only thing that's gnawing me a little bit is, contrary to what my colleague, Commissioner Fedorchak, just said, is some of the jurisdictional questions. I like the settlement agreement. I like what you guys have done. Clearly, like Mitch pointed out, there are some disputed issues, but I'm going to talk with our general counsel a little bit and just see if there's something that we can maybe put in on our order as we adopt this, my viewpoint anyway, that talks a little bit about this. I think the big thing that Quest needs to take away from all this is if you don't keep people happy, they're going to walk. And the challenge here is that it's in such a tough area because there's no other services out there. So that made me lean back more towards the settlement agreement. But at the end of the day, the whole telecom world continues to be churning and burning out there. And that's where I do like the statement in the settlement agreement that says nothing in this – means we'll do something like this in the future. So that might be enough to suffice my concerns. But I do appreciate Mitch and staff bringing this forward. I appreciate Quest's response to this because, Blick, I think you do a pretty darn good job of what you do. I think the challenges you face sometimes with the people above you don't give you the resources you need until a complaint like this is filed. So thank you all.
Thank you, Commissioners. We decided there wouldn't be any late-filed exhibits, but what about proposed findings and conclusions in order? Is that something that Council is going to work on here? Mr. Sanderson?
Either adopt the settlement or not adopt it.
Yeah,
yeah, I think we don't need to request them in this case.
All right. Okay. Well, then I'll close the hearing on the approval of the settlement of the Quest complaint. Subject to the comment deadline of December 19th, but the hearing on case number PU-15-677 is closed.